No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 1. We have a lot to talk about tonight, so no guests, just us. We, of course, want to know what you think. So please call in, once again, 888-628-6008, or Skype us with your questions, and we'll answer them. Before I go any further, however, let me introduce my co-host, Kathleen Gomez, who tried to kill the dog this week when she tripped over him on the way from the kitchen to the dining room. Hey, Kathleen, what's going on? Are you there? Uh-oh, we've lost Kathleen. Okay, we're not connected with Kathleen, but we'll get her in a minute. She's out there somewhere. Maybe she's wrestling with the dog again. I don't know. But we'll get her. We'll either get her in on her headset, or we'll get her in by phone, one way or the other. Let's start out the show tonight talking about our main subject, which we love to talk about on the show, and that's D.C. statehood and what's been going on this week. First and foremost, the good news. This week, three new co-sponsors of H.R. 317, the new Columbia Admission Act, D.C. statehood bill. So let's give a shout out to my old friend, Nita Lowy, from New York, 17th District. Her daughter Jackie and I are old friends, very dear friend of mine. Jackie was at my wedding. And so we thank you, Nita, for signing on. Also, Paul Tonko, New York's 20th, and Anna Issue, California 18, for a total of 119 co-sponsors at this point. So that's the good news. Beyond that, there's some bad news. This week was a tough week. The bad news this week is that the Reproductive Health Non-Discrimination Amendment Act, which was passed by our D.C. City Council, was then challenged in Congress, which you know is the way that we have to live here in the district, because Congress has the right to do whatever it wants in the district as undemocratic and as un-American as that is. So the Republicans got together, and they fought, and they put together a floor battle on Thursday night. And a shout-out to our delegate to Congress, Eleanor Holmes Norton, who fought hard. And there was a vote along party lines, and the Republicans passed a resolution to overturn this legally passed law, which would protect a woman's right to employment, regardless of what she did in her personal life with reproductive health. It seems crazy that they would even oppose this, but they did. The good news there is that the bill will still go through because the Senate has not taken up a companion bill, and the president has said that he will veto it if they do. So it doesn't even look like it's going to get to the president's desk. But if it did, the president would stand up for the District of Columbia. So thank you, Mr. President. In addition,
Senator Brown?
Yeah, are you there, Kathleen?
I'm finally here. Thank you.
Okay, good. One last thing I want to point out about the Reproductive Health Non-Discrimination Amendment Act, that's a mouthful, is that there were two things in the paper that I want to point out this week in the Washington Post. The first was a letter written by me, which appeared in the local opinion section, where I said at the end of the letter, until we stand up for D.C. statehood, our hubris will only result in another whipping. In other words, I was responding to a column that had been written by Colby King, where he said we need to stand up to Congress. And basically I said, standing up's a great thing, but in the end, until we change the law, standing up won't mean anything more than getting beat down again. And coincidentally, 3 days later, Phil Mendelson, chairman of the city council, in an interview said, I feel rather battered around, beat up by the whole thing. And that's the point. Phil, we need to be a state or you're going to continue to feel battered around and beat up by the whole thing. So just one more argument for statehood. If you're out there, we'd like to hear your opinion about this. But the district really needs to be equal. And the only way to be equal is to be a state. Are you with us, Kathleen?
Yes, finally. Geez. Yes, I am. And I just wanted to make a comment about the reproductive issue. As I understand it right, it just allows employers, right, to be able not to offer any kind of contraception method in their...
No.
They don't have to provide it in the health care?
No, actually, they're not allowed to discriminate against you. Under this law, I mean, without this law, theoretically, we could see what's happened was it Illinois or Ohio? I can't remember, where religious groups are allowed to discriminate against you. They could fire you because you had an abortion, or they could fire you.
Well, how would they know that, though? How do they get to know that if that's something that's, you know, between me and my doctor or Planned Parenthood or wherever? I mean, in other words, would it be something I told them, or is the fact that I have contraceptive pills or something, you know, birth control pills, they would be able to fire me for that?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think this protects you from being fired for that. But theoretically, you know, if you decided to terminate a pregnancy, right, and you had hospitalization, your employer could find out about it, right? Because the hospital bills would be picked up by hospitalization, and then they would find out.
This is what's interesting, because this is the whole Big Brother thing that the Republicans are so against, or the right wing, I don't even know if it's all Republicans, is that, you know, you're supposed to have freedom, and you're supposed to have less intrusion by the government, and, you know, less laws, less regulations. But when it comes to the issue of woman's body, they just want to keep on, you know, putting their hands into it. I don't know. I just don't quite understand the whole issue of why it's important. You know, I guess there are people that don't want to provide anything that has to do with birth control or anything that would be in the form of abortion, which I can understand. But so this law would protect you. So in D.C., the one that they passed would protect you from being fired? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And you know what? The Republicans talk out of both sides of their mouth. Come on. They're always talking about states' rights. They're always talking about the federal government not interfering with the 50 states or local, even beyond that, local government of any sort. But that's all they do in the District of Columbia. They interfere with us all the time, and it's the Republicans. I'm going to give you a quiz here, Kathleen, to see if you can pass this. Of the three people that I shouted out for being co-sponsors of the New Columbia Admissions Act, Paul Tonko, Nita Lowy, and Anna Ishu, what do you think they have in common?
That's there. You say this, ask me this question all the time, and it hasn't changed yet, the answer, and that's a Democrat.
Yes, they're all Democrats. Surprise, surprise. And these guys are all about not interfering with the government of the District of Columbia, and yet we can't get one of them to sign on to the new Columbia Admission Act. Not one yet. And there's people that go up on Capitol Hill and work very hard to local activists to get co-signers on the bill. And I know for a fact, because I've been with them on several occasions, that they visit Republicans. They just don't go to see the Democrats. They go to see the Republicans as well. But we can't get any Republicans to sign on at this point, because these guys want to talk the talk, but they just don't want to walk the walk. It's one of the most frustrating things about being in this battle, is to hear these guys stand up there and tell you how great America is and how we deserve to run our own affairs in every jurisdiction, except those areas in which the federal government must act. And in the end, they're always interfering with our local affairs. You know,
well,
of course, this whole thing was started by Ted Cruz before he announced the president. And that's what they do with Washington. They use us so that
they can
get the publicity.
Is your listening bud, did that turn off? Because I was just trying to say something. And I know you politicians love to talk.
I'm sorry. Were you just trying to say something?
I just want to make sure you can hear my voice.
Jeez, I can barely get a word in edgewise, but go ahead.
No, I guess they're doing this because they can, to show off to their supporters or the right wing. I just don't understand why they have to do it when they know, first of all, that it's not going to go anywhere. The Senate has already said they're not going to do any, bring that up. It had to be brought up, like you said, within the end of the week, and the president had to sign it. So why do you think they did it? Just to show their muscle, or just to be pushy, or what's the
purpose of it
when
it
can go nowhere?
To play to the crowd. And you know, this is one of the oldest political tactics, right, is that we pass a bill and then we don't fund it, for example. It's the same type of thing. You know, you pass it and then you don't fund it because it's not going to go anywhere. Or you vote for something that you know is not going to pass just so you can get brownie points, as we used to say, with the people that support the legislation. They do it all the time. They do it with gun control, especially do it with gun bills in the District of Columbia. So that's exactly why they did it. In fact, it was an abortion, a right to life group. I can't remember the name of the group, but they said that they were going to grade them on, you know, they were going to grade the members of Congress on whether they voted for this legislation or not. And they surely knew that it wasn't going to pass either. But they want to put pressure on, they want to make an issue out of this, and they want to put pressure on Congress. And they did it with the last bill, the D.C. Voting Rights Act, that we had before Congress in 2009. The NRA tacked a provision on our voting rights bill. And they said that they were great people in the Senate that stood up for voting rights. And so several Democrats that would have normally stood up for it, I think, backed down, and it didn't pass.
Wow, that's a shame. And I guess, you know, this isn't really the issue, but I guess we were talking about do employers like, say, Catholic University have the right to say they aren't going to provide those things in their health care? And you knowing that it's an institution like Hobby Lobby that's not going to support you in that kind of, you know, use of your health insurance, do they have a right to do it?
Well, first of all, I love that now that you brought up Hobby Lobby, I have to tell you about the comment that I believe it was Eleanor Holmes Norton. I can't remember if it was Eleanor Holmes Norton or Nancy Pelosi, both big supporters of the District of Columbia. One of them said, this is like Hobby Lobby on steroids. This is like Hobby Lobby to the extreme to do this. And, I think there is some question about the Hobby Lobby. I think you and I have a little different opinion. You know more than I do because you're a woman and I'm just a dumb old guy. But
just a low-life guy. Just a man, low-life man.
But anyway, you know, This is way beyond. It is. It's on the same track as the Hobby Lobby, and that's why they're doing it. But this is way further. This is really intrusive, and I'm glad that it's not going to become a law. But you know, we need to get to the point where they can't do this to us anymore. And
well,
that was the point
of my.
I'm sorry.
What I was going to say is, I don't get why there's nobody in the city that really is up in arms about it. I don't understand why. I mean, I do understand why the city council doesn't. We talked before, they don't want to give up power, and they're very small-minded. And just think, if they did something like that, support stated, and where we would actually have people who would run for two Senate seats, a House of Rep, maybe a governor and the like, they just, you know, I don't think they'd be able to corrupt as much. You know, I am not a fan of the city council. I've seen how they've acted, and I just think that they're just really not representing the people, and they lie to the people quite a bit.
Well, you know, I've got to tell you, yeah, I find it frustrating, too, that they won't stand up for statehood. And I think that some of them do, in fact, stand up for statehood, but a lot of them don't. And I they all give lip service to it.
Well, they all say, tell me who stands up for statehood. I'd like to hear it from you. Who stands up for statehood?
Well, I think Vincent Orange, who's a councilman, has stood up for it, and Yvette Alexander, and, you know, there are other people on the council that have, they were co-sponsors of legislation to fully fund us and move our office forward. Marion Barry certainly was one. He's no longer with us. Jim Graham was one, but he's no longer with us.
Well,
I
that's
mean,
my
were,
point. That's my point. This is a new city council, so you can't really think about the last one because they're no longer around. This is a new, you know, field of new people,
right.
Quite a few new people. In fact, I don't know. I want to talk about what happened to you with the D.C. Democratic State Committee. But I was just, when we were talking about city council, I was excited about Trayon White. I know he was real upset, and I hope it's someone like him who's a maverick, you don't know which side he would end up, but it would be nice to see somebody who is going against the political machine in D.C., which is what this guy is doing.
Well, that's an interesting thing. You know, it's not only that how you feel about him as a candidate, and we both know him. And I know that you like him, and I like him too. He's a good guy. There are other candidates in the race that I liked. But the big thing for me with him is this is a guy with very little money that came up against a woman who was endorsed by the mayor, who I also like, by the way, but had $280,000. And I don't know if this resonates with people out there, but more than $250,000 in a ward race is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. Last time I ran citywide, I put $30,000 in election. So that's a lot of money. And they've come to a dead heat. In fact, they haven't called the election yet because Trayon's only about 150 votes behind the leader. So they haven't officially called the election for the other candidate yet, LaRuby May. And I think that's the thing that really stands out, is that the people in Ward 8 stood up for this guy, and this guy got them to the polls. And I think he was a protege of Marion Barry, and I truly believe that if Marion Barry's son had not been in the race, he got 500 votes approximately, that Trayon probably would have won.
Now,
I think that's amazing.
If it gets so close, like say if there's 1,000 votes, special votes out there, right, that they haven't counted,
yeah.
I think is what the paper said. So would there ever be a situation that they could do a recall? Like, you know, do it again or no? It's just whoever.
No,
however,
a recount potentially, but I think it has to be within 1%. And you know what? This could potentially. No, I don't think this could fall into the margin of 1%. The leader, the woman who's probably going to win, LaRuby May, has 1,700 votes. I mean, it's not – that's another amazing statistic, that there have been people elected to the city council with 100,000 votes. And
right.
This woman may get on with 1,700. And and 1% of 1,700 would only be 17 or 18, but they'd have to be like within 20 votes of each other to trigger a recount. But interestingly enough, with Treon, this is to take over the unexpired term of Marion Barry, who was a councilman from Ward 8. And by the way, if you don't know Washington, D.C., Ward 8 is the poorest ward in the city. But it's only for 13 months. So there'll be another election in 13 months, which means that in approximately 5 or 6 months, these guys will be running again. So right. Treon has vowed to run again. And I think with a little more time, he's obviously going to get more money now because people will see him as a real contender. And I think, you know, that it may be a real dogfight come the primary election.
Well, I tell you, I wanted you to go that night to go to his party. You know, they had to vote on Tuesday. And you're just too old. You couldn't go back out that way. But I think that would have been – I heard and read that it seemed to be quite a party because they came so close. You know, and I remember we went to the Ruby Mae's party and everybody was very somber and we didn't quite figure it out. And then we said, oh, that's why, because it's not as – it was just so close. You know, too close to call. But I hope
we went,
that's the kind of, huh?
We went to two parties.
Yeah.
And that's all I can take as an old guy.
Plus, I know, which Treon, hang out with
Treon's a young guy. And if we'd gone to his party, there would have been people helping us around. You know how that annoys me when everybody calls me sir and holds a door for me and wants to pull a chair out for me because I look like I'm so old that I'm going to collapse somewhere. So,
and that's why you tripped me up the other day and I banged my head, my hand, and my knee. Did you tell the audience that you did that just because I wouldn't mow your lawn as a good Mexican guest? You know, I was supposed to mow your lawn, clean your house, and dust and vacuum and cook, and I refused to do the lawn. I just put my foot down.
My poor 120-pound Labrador Retriever was just doing what he does, laying on the floor, taking up half the damn kitchen. And there came poor old Kathleen stumbling along. I can't remember.
I had a bunch of lilacs in my hand.
Did you have your walker with you? I can't remember. But and then she tripped over the poor dog, scared the life out of him, I think. Of course, you know, because Kathleen is an overachiever, she couldn't have just tripped and dropped the flowers. She tripped. She hit her head. She hit her hand. She hit her knee. You know, she slammed everything.
There was blood. So, there was blood.
There was blood, you know.
And thank God for your wife.
Yeah, thank God for my wife because, you know, our insurance company, our homeowner's insurance is from like Carl's of North New Jersey. So, you know, you would only got, if you killed yourself, you only got like $20 or something. We don't, the Browns aren't big on insurance.
The lawyer will be contacting your lawyer.
We're glad you're not hurt. And the dog wasn't hurt. He was scared a little bit.
Oh, thank God.
But
you know, my lawyer should be contacting you.
Still hanging around Kathleen.
But I know he's been trying to be nice to me today. But do we want to talk? Maybe we want to talk about this whole thing that this D.C. Democratic State Committee is trying to do to you. Maybe after we go to break, since it's already 7:25. But we have to, before we go to break, we have to give a shout out. We went to the Howard Theater and the Harlem Gospel Singers Choir. What is it? Harlem Gospel Choir. I can't talk now because I had so many mimosas. And it was just great. Anybody in D.C., you know, probably so many people know about it, but it was definitely worth it. It had great food, soul food, collard greens and fried chicken and macaroni and cheese and great desserts and bottomless mimosas.
Well, while Kathleen and my wife were wasting her time eating the collard greens and drinking champagne and orange juice, I want the public out there to know that your man, Senator Michael Brown, stood up and ate his weight in fried chicken, macaroni and cheese, biscuits and gravy, all the manly food. You would have been proud of me. Of course, they had to take me to the car in a wheelbarrow. But other than that, yeah, the food was great. And the music was even better. You know,
it was even better.
It's Why don't we get back from the break? We will talk about what's going on with the D.C. Democratic State Committee. And it's just been a tough week for me, as you know. I've been attacked on all sides. Not only fighting with Congress these days, but I'm fighting with the city council to get more involved. And now I find myself fighting with the D.C. State Committee that's trying to pull the plug on my for the first time since I've been elected, and I've been serving for close to 9 years, for the first time, they're trying to get to have my status as a delegate to the convention taken away. And I would be the only United States senator in the country that wouldn't be what's called a PLEO, an unpledged delegate. PLEOs are elected leaders. That's what it's PELO, and it stands for pledged elected leaders. So I would be it would be the first time that I wasn't what we call a superdelegate. And
we are going to talk about this after the break.
But
and right now,
all right. So let's take a break. Those of you that follow music have all heard of Benny King, the former member of the Platters, who went and had a solo career, and he passed away this week. So we lost a great one, and we're going to play one of his most famous songs, which is Stand By Me.
Let me say something before you go to it, that I just wish out there in our audience there's more people that would stand by each other and stand for what's right, stand for what's true, be loyal, and be honest, you know, and stand by me, right?
Right. So, if you're out there after the break, call in and just let us know that you're listening and you stand for us. And I'd like to dedicate this song to the people that stand for me. And there aren't a whole lot of them these days, but this certainly goes out to Kathleen, to my wife, Pat, to Bonnie, to Rachel, and all the other people that are involved in our movement. That stand up for me every day, and I appreciate it. We'll be back in a minute.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see. No, I won't be afraid. Oh, I won't be afraid just as long.
There we are. Stand by me. And I hope the people out there that are listening to our show will call in and let me know you're out there. Just call in or Skype us and say, look, we stand by you. Because it's been a tough week for me. And I've got to tell you, you know, there's an old saying that whenever God closes a door, he opens a window or he opens another door. And I really felt that today. It's funny that Kathleen and I had decided that we would take Mrs. Brown to the Harlem Choir Gospel Brunch, which is something that she's always wanted to do. But I was in a terrible mood. I was just beaten down.
Yes, you were.
By the people who have been standing against me. And it was great to go to hear this gospel music, which I love, by the way. And, you know, it reminded me that this is a tough battle. It's not supposed to be easy. And as long as you're on the right side, as long as you have God behind you, it doesn't matter who stands in front of you. You can get it done. You know, we've seen great things. We've seen people. We saw a little seamstress from Montgomery, Alabama, change the world, named Rosa Parks, change the world. We saw, look at what Dr. King did. And, you know, I think we forget sometimes that he was only 39 years old when he was assassinated. So great things can be accomplished. You don't need everybody on board, but damn, sometimes it's tough. And this was
tough. It is tough to always be fighting an upward battle. And, you know, it was a bad week for me, too. You know, because this is, I know it's hard for you to believe, but it's not always about you, Senator Brown. I do have, what is it called, the co-host position?
I really think of it more as a supportive, you know, person for Senator Brown. It's kind
of really?
Rough.
We're going to have to renegotiate, you know.
Yeah, you know, you're like my underprivileged children employment project. I've reached out to you to try to pull you up.
My head is bleeding again. My head is bleeding again. But let's go to talk about the D.C. Democratic State Committee, which is got it Anita Bond at the helm because she's not only a city council person, but she is in charge of the Democratic Party, which I think is totally a conflict of interest, but then that's me, correct? And who am I to understand
I think there are a few people out there in the District of Columbia that might agree with that. You know, it's not necessarily a conflict of interest, but it certainly smacks of
corruption,
a little impropriety where it may in fact be. And I think this week we've seen an example of that in that they've put together a delegate selection plan for the convention, which every state has to do. And I am the only United States senator, including the other United States senator from the District of Columbia, who has been taken out of the plan. The first time since I've been elected, according to the plan, I will not be a delegate to the convention. I was a delegate to the convention by virtue of my office in Denver. I was a delegate to the convention by virtue of my office in Charlotte. But all of a sudden, I'm not a delegate to the convention. And, you know, the only thing that makes me different, the one thing that I have that no other United States senator has, is that I ran against Anita Bonds in the election in November. So this is the one thing that distinguishes me. I ran against the chairman of the Democrat Party, whose job it is to supervise the putting together of the plan, and all of a sudden I'm no longer in the plan. So we're going to fight.
We are going to fight. But let me also put in there that just when the DNC had their winter convention, they put in language acknowledging that there was a shadow delegation made up of two senators and a representative who had been voted by and elected to the position by the voters, correct?
Yes.
And that passed through the Rules Committee, which, you know, I think that kind of took them surprise because we brought it up. Why didn't they have that in the makeup of the statehood? And so we thought that put an end to it, but now, and I don't understand why she is so vindictive, and this is the thing that people in D.C., I mean, I've talked to you about this, the people that live in the city that, you know, it's like two layers, right? You have one layer of people who work with the federal government and just don't care about D.C. government, even though they pay taxes. They just think it's below them, that it's a corrupt system, that, you know, it's a system that doesn't really need to be given statehood because they don't deserve it. And when I look at this kind of thing that Anita Bonds is doing, I kind of agree. Because unless the people get these people out of these offices that are using their political position that they're elected to turn around and strike out at other Democrats. I mean, what the Republicans do made its change, but when we were on the Hill, they didn't eat each other up. They didn't stab each other back. They were probably inside the Republican National Committee. They did it, but they didn't bleed in front of everybody. And it just seems like this is just one of those vindictive, petty, little personal things that she is doing to you, where you have constantly in many situations bailed her out of many, many things that she needed help with. And this is her way of striking out at you, but I don't get it because Alyssa Silverman won with how much money did she won? And they're so mad that you took third place that they're deciding to strike out at you like this. This is something that people in the statehood movement should really think about. You don't want people like this leading you, and you don't want people like this telling you what to do. If you don't stand up for what's right, you don't deserve statehood.
Well, you know what? I mean, first of all, when you say there are people that think the district government is corrupt, look, we've had two councilmen, one an active councilman, go to jail, one a former councilman who just left the council, go to jail. The chairman of the city council resigned in disgrace. We had another councilman get beaten for re-election because of the things that he was up to. So that's four members of a body that only has 12 people on it. That's a third of the city council, and that's all since the last election. In addition to that, we had six people that were top aides to our mayor go either plead guilty to serious charges or go to jail. And we have the mayor, who is still under investigation, our former mayor, but obviously lost his bid for re-election because of the scandals involving him. So when people think the District of Columbia government is corrupt, well, I got bad news for you. To a certain extent, it is. And we believe the mayor and several new members of the council are going to change that. But that perception is a true perception. Democratic State Committee is supposed to stand for elected Democrats in the District of Columbia. They really don't do that. They've never stood up. 8 years, the Democratic State Committee has never done anything for me that I – they've never even come to me except to ask for money and ask for my, support. But that's it.
Well, you know, the other thing that they seem to keep on getting you on is that you had to, by law, there's only, when you ran for the at-large position in this last election, there was a Democratic seat that's held for the Democrats, right? And there was.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that, Kathleen. What?
I said there. During this election that was at large, the last one that you ran for, correct?
Yes.
There was two seats, at large seats. One was specifically held for a Democrat. And so they had those primaries, and Anita Bond won it. So
yes.
There was an extra seat. Now, that seat, by law, back, I can't remember when you told me, but was always supposed to be held for an independent or a Republican. Is that what it was?
Well, actually, what happened when we got the Home Rule Charter, because we're so Democratic Party here in the district, when they negotiated the Home Rule Charter, they Republicans insisted that two seats on the city council be reserved for the non-majority party, or in other words, the Democrats.
So it could be the Green Party.
Yeah, they could be anybody but Democrats. And how crazy is that? That's so un-American. There's no other place. In Arizona, you don't have two seats set aside for Republicans or Green Party or whoever. The election is the election. So the Democratic Party, this is wonderful. The Democratic Party in the District of Columbia, the Democratic State Committee, has always stood up against this. And now, since I, for 6 months, changed my party affiliation to independent so I could run for one of those seats, along with 15 other candidates. And
I would say were mostly Democrats.
Mostly Democrats. There was a Green Party candidate. There was a Libertarian candidate. But the other 12 candidates, one of them won the primary, and the other 11 were Democrats who changed to independents, including the woman that won, Alyssa Silverman.
Right, Alyssa Silverman.
She was a Democrat up until the time she ran for the seat. So this is a common thing that's done in the district. The Democratic Party is supposed to be against it, but now they're trying to use it against me. In fact, this is probably the most disheartening of all the things, is that a friend of mine and a lawyer for the Democratic Committee looked into this for me, and he called me yesterday and said that the Democrats thought I was an independent, which is, of course, untrue. The Democrats at the national level never thought I was an independent. In fact, on the Democratic State Committee website, I've always been listed as an elected Democrat in the District of Columbia. And I was, in fact, elected as a Democrat. I'm a member of the Democratic Party today. Of the last, in the last 35 years, I've been a Democrat, with the exception of the 6 months for that election window. And now they're saying that's the reason that I've been disqualified is, oh, they made a big mistake. They didn't think I was a Democratic senator. They thought I was an independent. But that's nonsense. It's not true. And we're going to fight it. I mean, if we have to bring a lawsuit, we'll bring a lawsuit. Whatever right. needs to be done, because it's ridiculous that this petty nonsense interferes with our struggle for freedom. These guys in the Democratic State Committee ought to be ashamed of themselves to even try to pull this nonsense, because it degrades my office and it stands in our way. So we're not going to stand for it. In the end, I've been to the last 10 Democratic conventions, and I'd be willing to put money on the fact that I will be at this one. The real question is, will I be standing outside the hall in Philadelphia with the sign that says D.C. Democrats, I don't know what, are unfair?
I think we'll think it's something bigger than that.
As a delegate. Huh?
I think we'll think it's something bigger than you standing outside with a little sign. I think that it's time that people either step up and do what's right. And, you know, for the statehood movement, part of, you know, I've been an observer, and one thing that's been kind of great is that when you stand on the outside, you can see things really clearly. Because in D.C., it's kind of true. You're inside the Beltway. Everyone gets wrapped up with their greatness. Everyone gets wrapped up with who they think they are. And when you're outside of the Beltway, you can kind of see clearer. And it's a sad state of affairs from what I see. I see people that have been in the movement for a long time that would rather stab each other in the back than really push it forward. I think that the only way the state is going to go through is by looking at people who are totally not involved with the city council, who are not in that political machine, and not these statehood people are what I would call careerists. They're career statehood people. They don't really want to see it finished, because then what would they do? You know, I've got a real bad taste in my mouth when I see what's going on, and I think that this past week has just kind of made it a situation where enough is enough. You know, no matter what, it's time to do the right thing. It's time to be honest and stand up for what is fair and for what is right. And if you don't want to do it, then, you know, then I guess you sleep all right at night. I don't know. I don't understand how Anita Bonds can do this, how she can be so vindictive.
Well,
say it right from there, and I'm going to say these are my words. Then she's got two people who work for her who are in the same ilk. And I'll tell you, they're going to do this to you, Michael. Who is the next people they're going to do it to? Somebody who's a voter, somebody who didn't do what they wanted and then has no voice? We can sit here and talk, and we can go on the Internet, and we're not afraid of them. But it makes me wonder what they do to their voters in their district if they're going to do this kind of vindictiveness to you. And those are the people that don't know where to go to complain.
Well, first of all, let me say, we don't know that it's Anita Bonds, but it's only because I ran against Anita Bonds. So there's certainly people on the state committee. There's certainly people on the state committee that are out to get me. And the information that's come back to me about why this has happened is untrue. I mean, they forget that not only, you know, they're trying to blame this on the national Democrats, the Democratic National Committee, who's in control of the convention, but they forget that I was not only a staffer at the DNC, as you were for many years, I was a consultant for 21 years to the Democratic National Committee. So there's nobody on the state committee that understands the Democratic National Committee as well as I understand it. And so we know that the information, the things they've been telling us are untrue. So we're going to fight it, and we're going to get to the bottom of it. And one more thing. When I said standing out in front of the thing with a little sign, please understand that it's going to be in the summertime, and I'm expecting you to hold the sign. I'm going to be somewhere where there's air conditioning.
You're going to stand naked for the sign?
I'm gonna, no, you don't have to stand naked, but you need to, you know. I wasn't planning on me standing with the sign. I was just speaking, you know, metaphorically. I expect you to, you and the dog to be out there with the sign.
Oh, okay.
But anyway.
Well, how about this? We'll talk to our friend Jay Allen, and he'll get us some real nice biker girls to stand out with a sign.
Oh, that's what we need. And I can ride my Harley up. We'll get some of those pretty biker girls from Jay to stand out there. That'll get more attention than either one of us would get. But you know that's the point. The point is that look, these guys are supposed to be standing up for D.C. and they're supposed to be standing up for elected Democrats in D.C., which I'm one, and they allow this petty nonsense to get in the way of doing what they're meant to do. But it really, really got to me yesterday, as you well know. But today I was re-energized. I got to go hear some good gospel music. And you know what? Nobody ever said this was going to be easy. I didn't do it because it was easy. I didn't do it to make friends. I did it because it's the right thing to do. And we're going to continue to do the right thing. And I believe in my heart of hearts that doing the right thing matters. And in the end, we'll be victorious and we'll be there. And, you know, they can do what they want.
Well, yeah, I think that they've crossed the line now. And, you know, I think what they don't understand is between you and I, we know a lot of people, and we know a lot of people that are in the DNC, and we are going to get bottom of this. And I think it's time to call the liars out, you know, and say, hey.
Well, and you know what? Another thing they forget about me is that I, you know, I buried both my parents when I was 15 years old. I've been standing on my own for almost 50 years, and I actually do my best work when I'm standing alone, I think, and even better work when I'm backed into a corner. So now they back me into a corner, and it just shows how short-sighted they are. You know, when I came up against these people in the election in November, I had no money, I had no support, no endorsements, and you know what?
Right.
I came in third.
Well, that's what the problem is. They're scared, and they want to teach you a lesson. And that, to me, that is so just—it's just an atrocity because it's not about them teaching anybody a lesson. It's about them doing what's right. And you know, it's—and you know, whether it's in Douglas, Arizona, because I saw the same kind of behavior in the city council there. And then you come to a place where you kind of think, well, okay, you know, these people are going to be more educated, more maybe experienced or understand they're in the nation's capital. And I think that's going to be your biggest problem. And I'm saying this as somebody outside of the system, is that if the people within D.C. don't get their act together and clean up the city council, clean up this kind of behavior, you really aren't going to get any further than you are now. You might go backwards because,
well,
you know,
absolutely.
You got to have a movement that not necessarily is pure, nothing is ever pure, but it's done for the right reason, whether it's equal rights, whether it's women's rights, whether it's gay rights, whatever. It's got to be for the good for all and not for the few. And, you know, that great saying by Machiavelli, right, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And I know you say you don't want to say her name, but I'll say it. I think Anita Bonds really needs to be called to the floor, to the mat for that. She's head of this committee. We know, I saw at the convention, the winter convention, that she, it goes through her. And I don't know why people are afraid.
Well,
let me say this. Let me finish my statement. That I don't understand why anyone is afraid of any political figure because you voted them in, and my God, you could recall them and you can vote them out. But it takes a little bit of effort. But these people run your everyday life, and they have an impact on everything you do. And if there's somebody out there who really wants statehood, you have to get involved. You have to do it now, and you have to keep the movement going because these people will keep it. They'll stop it because it benefits them too.
Well, you know, again, I want to say you're more than welcome to express your opinion. We have no idea who's doing this in the state committee. We only know that it's being done by the state committee. And, you know, certainly the head of the state committee should take some responsibility for straightening it out. I was told by a lawyer yesterday that represents people on the state committee that they would probably not challenge on my behalf because there are enough people on the state committee that don't like me. So it's not necessarily being generated by her, but it certainly is being generated by the, by the Democratic State Committee. And furthermore, you know, the fact that I don't think they'll challenge on, we'll give them the opportunity to challenge on my behalf, but you know, we'll just see what is going to come of it, and see if they will do that. You know, we'll
well, you're
see.
Being so you know, you are a politician.
Well, we don't know who it is.
We
really don't know who it is. But
we
know, we're making assumptions, and we shouldn't do that. We're on a public airway, and we don't know who's at the bottom of this. But the point is that the state committee. The point is that the state committee is, you know, that this has never been done before. This is the first time it's ever been done. So we need to stop it, and we'll see if they step up to the plate or not. But it's not the opinion of the show that it's any one person in particular. It's just that we know what the situation
is, and
you know, it's got to change. And before we leave, because we're running out of time, I'd like to talk about what's going on in Baltimore. You know, we've had riots here in Baltimore. Baltimore's like a second home to me because my first job, my first real job in life was as a Teamster when I was 17 years old as a delivery driver in Baltimore. I love it. It's a great city, and I hate to see it torn apart. It's a terrible, terrible tragedy that happened to Freddie Gray. I think that I commend the Attorney General for bringing charges against officers involved, and indictments aren't convictions. These public servants have the right to go through the regular trial process, and we have to see when you know, we have to see what the outcome is. But at least they're being brought before a court of law so that this can be investigated. And I'm sorry to see Baltimore torn apart, because it's a lovely city with lovely people. And I think there are a lot of outside provocateurs that are, you know, involved in this. And the looting and the rioting has nothing to do with Freddie Gray. I think that, you know, Gray's parents, you know, his family, much to their, you know, you know, goodness, have come out
well,
and said,
Michael,
don't be violent.
Right. And we'd like, I'd like to talk to that about our next show, but we are running out of time. And
okay.
I saw that part of the discussion was men, why do we need them, and who the hell wants them? That's definitely going to be another show. And I got a lot of ammunition for that one. But I want to thank everyone for listening in to what we've been going through in the last week and what the senator has. And, hey, I'm glad I'm not a politician, because I throw the gauntlet down. And Anita Bonds, if you want to come on our show and call me a liar, please do. You know how to contact us.
Okay. Thanks, America. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.